Ball hit deep in the left center field. Wise back.
Makes the catch!
What a play!
Wade Wise makes the catch! What a play by Wise! Mercy!
This is the Shoeless Goat Podcast.
Brent Brown drops the ball! He drops the ball! 3 runs will score!
You gotta be paping me! What in the hell are you doing?
Hello and welcome back to the Shoeless Goat Podcast. We're a Cubs, White Sox, and MLB podcast. I'm your host, Nick, and I am joined again by the mayor of Section 509, the scoreboard watcher himself, Patrick Bovard. Pat, how you doing?
I don't know. I think is the best way I can put it. We were talking in our group chat on like Wednesday, and I was like, I'm done with the White Sox. I hate this team. I'm at like a 13 out of 10 on the I hate this team meter. And then they sweep the Tigers. So I don't know. That's the best answer I got for you. I don't know how I am.
I mean, the Tigers could just be that bad that even a bad White Sox team can't let them get a win. But that's what we thought about the Royals, too. So
that is what we did think. And, yeah, I don't know. It's just it's been weird. And now we got Houston coming to town. So this could either be fun or go incredibly not fun very quickly. Either way, I guess we'll know in a couple days and then it'll be over with.
I was expecting to hear a lot of fire from you in the beginning of the episode, if you had any, Pat.
I think if you look back at the tape, we've actually shown a lot of fire because we're still trying hard to beat the Royals on a weekday series in Kansas City. Never mind that we're supposed to be World Series contenders. We tried really hard, but still lost the game. So that's fire.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I like to see it. So I'm going to make you wait on that. I'm going to do how we start the show all the time with a weekly recap we missed last week. So we'll just briefly talk about that. Cubs had a 3-game series in St. Louis, lost all three. There was a rainout. So on my birthday, the Cubs got to lose to the Cardinals twice. So that was awesome. So they lost all three of those. Came back home for a short series, 2 of 3 wins against the Marlins. The game I attended, they got 2 hit. So that was fun as well. They lost that game. Then you had kind of a soft spot in the schedule that the White Sox seem to also be in the midst of. You have the Nats, and then you have the Reds, and the Reds you're technically away for. So on Monday, the Cubs win 6-3 against the Nats. Tuesday, they drop 6-5, and Wednesday, they win the series 4-2. And Pat, for those watching on the live feed, is showing the Nick Madrigal bobblehead. Yep. That he got at the Monday Nats game, which he got to witness a victory, if I'm not mistaken. Correct, Pat?
Yeah, the Saturday Marlins game. It was I think they won.
Oh, it was Saturday.
It was like 95 degrees that day. I think I left in the sixth inning because I got there like an hour early to get this bad boy that apparently they give out bobbleheads for anyone these days. But hey, you know, it's on the stand now next to the Mini Minoso Hall of Fame one.
Yeah, that's I was wondering why you got up, and then as you were walking back, I was like, yeah, I know exactly what he's grabbing.
So you tried to do a signal, keep it rolling, but
yeah, exactly. I was unfazed as the professional I am. So yes, the Nick Madrigal bobblehead giveaway was secured by Pat. Did Olivia get one as well?
That's the real question. Yeah, we both got them.
Oh, man, so we got two.
I was nervous. I was like, are people showing up? And then we got there like, oh no, they got plenty of these guys left.
Yeah, there was a tweet that said that like people were lining up at like 9:30, but I think that was just one of the entrances by the bleachers.
It had to because I don't understand the lining up hours in advance for a giveaway. You know, sometimes then you don't get an RIP to the Hawk alarm clocks, but for like a Nick Madrigal bobblehead, that's dedication.
That's more of like a comedy giveway for me. So
that's
I'd be
true,
about
that's
it.
That's true.
So getting back to it, the Cubs took 2 of 3 from the Nationals. Thursday, they played the Field of Dreams game, which we'll briefly talk about after this week description. So it was a 4-2 win. I guess either the Cubs and Reds are so bad or the balls just weren't juiced like they were for the Field of Dreams game last year. But in any case, we'll take that 4-2 win. Drew Smyly, of course, the starter we were all expecting to see for such a momentous game. I will say it was pretty darn cool to watch some of that stuff, even if it was like the most boring game ever. Off Friday, because you have to get from Dyersville, Iowa to Cincinnati. Then you got a Saturday 7-2 win. So you already locked up the series victory, but could not get the sweep on Sunday with an 8-5 loss. So going back to the Field of Dreams game ever so briefly, It was kind of cool. It was kind of lame in some aspects. You had Kevin Costner had some scheduling conflicts. Ray Liotta died so that he wouldn't have to go. And apparently the coolest thing ever would have been if James Earl Jones could go, but I think he's in his late 90s. So for a guy whose, I guess, voice is constantly being recorded by Disney at all hours of the day so they can continue to use him for Star Wars, he did not have enough time in the schedule to make it to Dyersville. But that would have been really cool. Yep. Another guest appearance by, I guess, a ghost, because that's what the movie was all about. It had hologram Harry Carey singing The Stretch. I don't know if I liked it or disliked it. I just thought it was odd.
That's a very good way. I was going to say people were like going nuts about it online. I'm like, I don't think it was that bad. It was just weird.
I thought it was kind of cool to see, having never seen Harry Carey live before. So I guess for those who saw him, you know, grew up listening to him, it was like a photocopy of the man. But for those who have only seen the commercials and the lore, it was cool to see kind of just a body in the flesh as opposed to just seeing it on a video screen. But it was still weird, and I still don't know how I feel about it. It's like still seeing the Empire guy in commercials, knowing he has also lost us. We've lost him. But in any case, that was my take on the Field of Dreams game. I thought it was cool to watch. I thought the uniforms were really cool, but also that they were pretty similar to each other. I would have liked if the Cubs wore the blues. But yeah, it was cool to see. And the Cubs kind of went out early and won the game, and the pitching held very strong. So they're not doing it next year. I could go without it for forever, honestly. But cool to be a part of it, I guess, is my takeaway.
Yeah, it was. I watched most of that game. I think, you know, it's still a cool experience. I think, like, at least for me, I mean, obviously, one, being a Sox fan, and two, having been at the first one, it would be hard for anything to measure up to that for me. But I still think, you know, watching it on TV, it's a cool experience. It's something different. Like, I agree, too. I don't think they need to go back another year, maybe in a few years. But I think just go somewhere else. Like, it doesn't need to be a movie, just somewhere kind of off the grid a little bit. Play a game there. I think that keeps it a little bit unique, where you're not just burning out, you know, one of the Midwest teams every year versus somebody. And then eventually you get like the what I saw that tweet last year, like the Rays and the Diamondbacks wearing 1919 era throwbacks that didn't actually exist. I was surprised there were no home runs. I thought anybody who bet the under was an idiot in that game, and it ended up happening. So I guess I'm the idiot. But yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a cool experience. Kind of getting Ken Griffey Jr. and Sr. to come out of the corner at the beginning was kind of a nice touch. With Kevin Costner not there. So still were able to pull off a pretty cool event. It seemed just didn't have, at least for me, you know, some of the buzz around it. But as a fan of baseball in general, and I do like the movie, I know it's kind of corny. It's not kind of, it is extremely corny, but I enjoy watching it. So for me, it still had a nice effect kind of getting to see that game.
See, I don't like the movie.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know.
I will say the one thing about the game that, to me. Yeah. No, it's, I feel like it depends on the lens. Like, the plot itself is very limited, I guess, just kind of for a lot of people, it's just that like emotional attachment to it, I guess. But I, what was I going to say? Well, the one other thing for that game, did you watch the part where they had Joey Votto on the mic when he was playing first?
I may have had it muted because I was doing something else.
He was mic'd up playing first base. And I'm like, if this guy had stopped, well, I don't think Joey Votto would, but if this guy stops paying attention for like a second, he could get absolutely like cracked by a line drive.
Yeah, I think they always mic up the outfielders, but the Reds don't have anybody interesting out there, so they're like, we just need Joey Votto really bad. I don't find Joey Votto particularly interesting either, but he's slightly more interesting than Ian Happ. But I think John Smoltz referred to him as the most interesting man in professional baseball, which is just simply not the case.
There'd be a lot of people up there in front of him for me.
Yeah, I don't know. Off the top of my head, I'm thinking like, maybe Johnny Charlie Cueto. Blackman, Johnny Cueto, Charlie Blackman. Like, I'm sure there's some weirder guy. James Caron.
Yeah, I was going to say him too.
Yeah. So I don't know. They were doing their jobs. They were hyping up the game. Yeah. I also thought it was cool that the like the Bat Boys and stuff were wearing like old school, like, you know, caps and everything like that. I, I'll give it a B minus event. You know, I'm good with
it. So cool
with it being that. But anyway, moving on. We're done with that, and we're done with the Field of Dreams game forever. Hopefully, let's go on to the Sox. The last couple weeks of action with that.
It's been weird. So I think the last time we talked, the Sox had just started up their run of 19 games against teams under 500. The second such stretch, not against under 500 teams, but the second consecutive stretch of 19 games where this is where they turn things around and kind of really go on a run. And, you know, spoiler alert, they kind of did, but didn't really. 2 weeks ago, so the week we missed, they had a series against Kansas City at home where they dropped the opener in a very frustrating game. Basically blew a really nice Kopech start, but came back to win the last two of that series to get the 2-1 win. And then they went to Texas and had a frustrating split where they lost the first game with only at five hits. They won Friday 2-1. They got blown out 8-0 by Dane Dunning on Saturday, and then they won again on Sunday. So really just not a great week that ended up at 4-3. And as a spoiler alert, I wonder how this week is going to go. They started off with a series against Kansas City. So again, another very good opportunity to win some games, maybe make up some ground in the standings, especially with the Twins and Guardians playing at least slightly more challenging opponents, if I remember correctly. But again, they didn't do it, which is pretty much how this entire season has gone. Started off with a doubleheader on Tuesday. They lost game 1-4-2. Lance Lynn wasn't great, and Brady Singer shut down the White Sox offense, threw over seven innings. Really couldn't get anything going offensively, only had one extra base hit, which was a Josh Harrison solo shot. Game two, though, they came around and won, got the first career home run from Lenin Sosa, the 22-year-old shortstop, who is now going to be playing a ton with Tim Anderson out for 6 weeks, which is just fantastic. You also got a homer from Yoan Moncada, who that's probably the only good thing I can say for him this week. But in any event, you won the game 3-2. You split a doubleheader, which is always the goal, I feel like, with the doubleheader. And then you go to Wednesday, you know, with a chance to win the series 3-1 or at least split, and they lose 8-3 in an extremely ugly game Wednesday, which is really saying something that I'm calling one single game ugly for the White Sox this year. But Johnny Cueto gave you 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 6 strikeouts. The Sox went up 3-1 in the sixth with a misplayed ball at second, and then absolutely blew up, giving up 7 runs in the last 3 innings and lost 8-3. That was after the game, which we'll talk a little bit later, where Johnny Cueto basically called out the team. It's kind of, you know, I was listening to the score and forgot about this, but Nick Castellanos 2018 style, basically saying that there was not enough fire, but probably talk about that a little bit in its own segment. And then Thursday, you get shut down by Zach Greinke in 2022, which is just beautiful. Lost 5-3. The Sox were 2-for-13 with runners in scoring position with 11 guys left on base. Not going to win a lot of games when you do that. And Dylan Cease got a loss with 1 earned run. So yeah, it was great. I was very mad. I think I talked about how this, you know, one was going to be fire and brimstone. And then they came out and swept the Tigers. So it's like, just, they're too good to, they're not bad enough to fall completely out of it, but they are not good enough to go on any sort of sustained run. So like I mentioned, swept the Tigers over the weekend, 2-0 win on Friday. It was ugly, but it worked. Kopech had a was no hitter through six with 11 strikeouts, and Tony pulled him, which I was fine with. You know, I thought maybe you give him one more inning, but he was at 85 pitches. He wasn't going to throw nine, not this year. But in any event, you won Saturday 6-4, kind of had a rocky start, but the offense was able to come together. Lucas Giolito settled in. And then today, Sunday, won 5-3, completing the sweep. Tigers got going early with a couple of runs, but then the Sox came back, kind of had a pretty good offensive stretch there. A.J. Pollock had another home run from the leadoff spot today. Andrew Vaughn, for the third game in a row, had the game-winning RBI. So, in general, a pretty good offensive series. Gets them to 56-53, the first time they have been 3 games over .500 since the 9th game of the season. And 2.5 back at Cleveland, who they play for a 3-game set next weekend. So, I don't know how it's going to go. This team, it's incredibly frustrating because they go from, like, it's over, like this team is dead, to sweeping the Tigers. So, I don't know. I don't really know what's going to happen. I'm just... I want something to happen either way, either go on a run and get there or just fall off. I like, this middle ground is terrible.
They are the purgatory team, that if you've ever seen one. I will say this. If Dylan Cease wants to get the win, he probably shouldn't give up that run.
That's true. He should. Why would he do that? What is that? I think that was his 13th consecutive start with 1 earned run or less given up.
He's got to be close, if not has already surpassed that the Arrieta run.
It's every stat, like they'll say, like for a 13 game stretch for ERA, it's Bob Gibson, like 1969, when they moved lowered the mound after that year. Arrieta, 2015, and then it was it's Cease and this year with Don Drysdale from 1 year when he pitched. Basically, those are the only three guys in that territory. I think it's like a 0.6 ERA over his last 13 starts.
That's, yeah, absolutely crazy. And he's getting like Matt Clement levels of run support too. Yep. So
it's bad.
Wins and losses don't matter though. So unless, of course, it's time for his contract, and then they will matter.
Oh, they will matter very much then.
Yeah. He's, or I should say that Matt Clement or Jose Quintana levels of or run support. Poor guy. Throughout his entire career, basically.
Yeah.
Current Cardinal, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, look, the Sox. I do check their score every day now because I know that this show is better when the Sox suck. It's just.
I would disagree. I have more fun when they're not bad.
I'm just talking about from a content perspective.
Yeah, no, the problem is they're too good to be legitimately bad. But then you look at it and they have 99 home runs as a team. I don't even know. It might not even be that high. They have the most singles in baseball, I think. They have like 700 singles out of their 1,000 hits. They have under 100 home runs.
It's the reverse Joey Votto as a team.
It's just, they've all become slap hitters. I don't know. Like I said, I thought I was going to be more mad on this, and then they swept the Tigers. Now I'm just again,
it's like the
tracker is going, how many times I've said, I don't know.
Is it the Madrigal curse?
You
trade your slap hitter, and then the team becomes slap hitter. We're going to have to carry him up a mountain or something like
part
that.
Part of the trade was him taking his talents with there. It's in whatever baseball. There's a glowing baseball he brought with him from the South Side. I don't know. It's like I said, I just want them to do something either way. I don't like living in this middle territory.
Fair enough. So let's move on then so that you don't have to. I'm going to talk about player of the week for the Cubs, and it's Justin Steele. This is a prime example of why wins and losses don't matter, because he went 0-0 and gave up 2 earned runs over 2 starts. That's 10.2 innings and had 19 strikeouts. So pretty damn good. 10.2 innings, 19 strikeouts. Of course, no wins to show for it, but that's what gets you the player of the week in my book. I wanted to make some comparisons. I wanted to look at his season stats too. He's 4-7 with a 3.63 ERA and 106 strikeouts. Putting in perspective, Michael Kopech has 96 strikeouts. So
he's a contact pitcher.
I'm just saying. Yeah, no. Obviously, Giolito and Cease have way more strikeouts. I just had to throw it out there.
He's learning to pitch. It's all part of the process.
Yes, he is learning to pitch. But in any case, I had to throw that out there. Honorable mention, though. I guess not for the. I just wanted to talk about him for a second. Christopher Morel, right now, actually is third in the team in home runs, which is sad, with 11. But at the same time, props to him for doing so. At first, I thought he was just kind of like this fun call-up story, and he's kind of worked his way into being a pretty important part of this quote-unquote rebuild, which we will certainly talk about in just a few moments. And another interesting news, Frank Schwindel was optioned. He went to Iowa, not for the Field of Dreams game, but to play baseball for. I think Ian Happ was talking about that. He goes, I never thought I'd be excited to go back to Iowa.
Cue the Anakin meme, like to Frank. Hey, Frank, here's your ticket to Iowa, like for the Field of Dreams game, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. anyway, that's a long-winded way of saying that Justin Steele is the player of the week. Who is the player of the week for the White Sox, Pat?
Yeah, this one was an easy decision for me. So it's Andrew Vaughn. You know, we have a couple of rules here. If you don't win a game, you don't get a player of the week. If you throw a no-hitter, you are the player of the week. This is kind of like that next tier of rules. If you have a game-winning RBI in all three, or the go-ahead RBI in all three games of a three-game series that your team sweeps, you're the player of the week. Even if one of those go-ahead RBIs today, Sunday, was a double play ball that the first baseman dropped on a throw he definitely should have caught, but, you know, doesn't matter. Still hit a home run later to give him an extra run. I think with Tim Anderson out, it kind of magnifies the importance of Andrew Vaughn's bat in the lineup. especially given there's really nobody hitting for power on this team. Jose Abreu leads the team with four, I think it's 14 home runs right now, which is really not what you want to see in middle of August. But I think, again, just kind of underscores how important Andrew Vaughn is to this team right now. I guess some honorable mentions to AJ Pollock for hitting really damn well out of the leadoff spot with a couple of home runs this weekend. And I think the biggest honorable mention goes to Johnny Cueto for potentially finally lighting a fire under this team, which is good, because I kind of thought about the contrast of, you know, Johnny Cueto now saying, you know, we have to show some fight if we have any. Obviously, Tony didn't like that. But after the game today, Andrew Vaughn said, his quote was pretty much that Johnny said that he wanted more fire and we played with a lot more fire this series. And you saw what happened. Kind of gives me a contrast to a few years ago when, after one game, I think it was reported Dallas Keuchel basically went off on people when they were losing in, I think it was 2020, and said, like, kind of tried to give the whole, like, this team needs to play with fire thing. And then when they won the next game, they asked Jose Abreu if that, you know, was that you, did that get you guys going? He was like, no, we were going to play hard anyways. That had nothing to do with it.
I love it. Know who else could get people going is Dallas Keuchel's mom on Facebook, apparently. I don't know if you saw this. She was saying that the White Sox are a horrible organization by the way they treated her son Dallas, and that Dane Dunning was very lucky to leave and go to Texas. Pat, your thoughts?
Well, I guess, first of all, he had like a 7 ERA this year, and they were the first of two teams to DFA him, and Texas probably will at some point. I liked the guy when they signed him. I have his jersey for better or worse. I thank him for his service in 2020 as a top five Cy Young guy. Just go away. I don't want to hear about his mom. It's also, I don't know if you remember this, but back in 2020, during spring training before COVID happened, there was this report that the team went out for dinner and Keuchel's mom at the team dinner screamed out "playoffs or die," basically at it. God. And it became this like rallying call. And I'm like, okay, this story of her now on Facebook, that checks out.
It reminds me of like the weird flack that was it the Florida coach, football coach's wife, like hugs and kisses all the yep. players as they get off the bus.
Yeah, a few years ago. Yeah.
That's what this reminds me of.
It's just like, yeah, the White Sox treat him unfairly. It's like, dude, he just was bad. Like, it happens. The Diamondbacks must have treated him unfairly too.
Yeah. Absolutely. But fun to move on from that as well. Love my boy Johnny Cueto, just doing what he does best and just, like, you know, gets everybody going. Maybe a little shimmy in the locker room. So there was an interview with Tom Ricketts, and this has been spoken about at length by many, but he was basically talking about how the performance hasn't been good enough and, you know, it needs to be better. Cubs fans deserve better, yada, yada, yada. And I like to hear it, but I don't think the actions of the team have, I guess, warranted him saying it needs to be better, as if it's not part of his fault. You know, who do you blame? David Ross? Do you blame, you know, the GM? I don't know. I think if you're 14th in payroll, teams that don't rebuild are like Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Dodgers. They refuse to, and they have the money, and the Cubs have that kind of money as well. They, you know, so rebuilds, I guess, aren't allowed in good organizations. The Cubs are certainly not a good organization if you look at their history. But he also stated that they plan on being aggressive in free agency. And I have to give Tom Ricketts credit for this. His track record in that regard is strong. So if he says that, I hope he means it. But also, I don't want it to mean that we're going to get one starter and one high-profile signing, which is what we did last time with John Lester and Jason Hayward, who also will not play another game for the Chicago Cubs, by the way. And although, you know, Jason Hayward's time as a Cub wasn't great, if you ask any of the players who were on the team in 2016, they probably would all say we couldn't have done it without him. So let's leave it at that. But going back to the Ricketts thing, We were promised that Marquee would allow us to sign all these players, and we should have been acting like the Red Sox, the Yankees, and the Dodgers, who also have their own networks. So now I can't really watch Cubs games, and the team apparently doesn't have the money until they decide they want to spend it. So I don't know what to take of this whole Ricketts thing, but what I do hope for is that he is honest in the aggressiveness they're trying to show in free agency next year, albeit not a super strong free agent season, I guess. And I don't know if signing like Trey Turner is going to turn this team around, because I certainly don't think it will. But I don't know. Any thoughts on that, Pat? I know it's kind of a rambling and kind of mini meatball-esque, but it was like aggravating and I guess awe-inspiring at the same time, if you will.
It's like the we're all trying to find the guy who did this meme. Like when saying like, oh, you know, this hasn't been good enough. It's like, well, yes. It kind of reminds me almost of around the trade deadline after the Sox, their only trade was Jake Diekman, and Rick Hahn said, like, you know, if fans are frustrated, like, you know, we share in that frustration. We're also frustrated that we couldn't make more deals. And it's like, if only there was somebody who was in charge of making trades.
Yeah.
But anyway,
that was the thing. He got that's what I do. Well, I'm just like curious too, like Rick Hahn at the trade deadline, like only got one guy and not even a solid piece. Is he just bad at negotiating? But we'll talk about that later, I guess. I just continue on what you were saying.
No, I mean, I think it's like that thing where it's like, it's good to hear, but at the same time, it's like the person saying it is kind of the person who's at least tangentially responsible for why that is. So, I mean, there's definitely players to sign this offseason. I guess it depends on how quickly you can build a team together. I don't, like you said, I don't think one big signing really gets the Cubs there. I think like unlike in 2015 when they got Lester, they got Hayward, they had those young players like really ready to go that were right there. And kind of 2015 was the perfect storm where kind of everything went together. You had like career years for a lot of people, but I don't know. It at least drums up fan excitement. And if you can, is this your show? And if you can get to like 83 wins, you might have a shot at a wild card, at least in the AL. But the NL, I guess, is a little bit different, but, you know, for better or worse.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But I want to put it this way. Jerry Reinsdorf hasn't talked to the media about anything ever.
Nope.
I think Sox fans would love to hear from him.
I don't know if it would – it's the type of thing where it would be good, but I also don't know if it would solve anything, because I don't think there's anything he can say that people would be happy with.
Yeah. I mean,
probably. It would be nice. The only one he talks to is Bob Nightingale, which is why anytime Nightingale says something about the White Sox, you have to at least somewhat consider it.
The most successful owner in Chicago sports history, though, if you think about it.
Yeah, I guess. Probably more than George Halas.
Yeah, 7 championships for him, right? Or
yeah.
7 championships for Reinsdorf in 2 different sports. And when Halas was winning his championships, there was like 6 teams. So
yeah, that's true.
but in any case, Michael Jordan had a lot to do with that, too. But anyways. Teams. Yeah, exactly. White Sox legend. White Sox legend. You know, really helped build the foundation for the Bull Sox Academy as well.
Exactly. It's all about laying the foundation.
Yeah. But again, he also mentioned, Ricketts also mentioned that it's important to build through the draft. And the Cubs prospects are decent, not great, but Pete Crow Armstrong is about to be named the number 31 prospect, number one of the Cubs system. So that's kind of exciting. But again, I think you're right. I don't think they have the, the soon-to-be regime in waiting that they had in 2014, 2015 to warrant a big spend. It is rumored that the Cubs, Ken Rosenthal came out and said that the Cubs will go after and sign one of the top free agent shortstops, those shortstops being Trey Turner, Carlos Correa, Dansby Swanson, and Xander Bogaerts. Of those four, which one do you think would be the best signing of those four?
Ooh, that's tough. I would, without looking at what their numbers are right now, I would lean towards one of Correa or Trey Turner. I think the thing with Trey Turner is just with his speed, kind of the way he impacts the game, can play a couple different positions defensively. I think that's a good signing. I think Correa as well, kind of obviously he hasn't been as good this year, but typically he's very good bat and a very, very good defensive player, which I think gives him a little bit more of a track record than, you know, Dansby Swanson, who's always been a good defensive player, but really hasn't exploded offensively until this year, if I remember correctly, at least. I just think one of those two guys, I don't know about Bogaerts, isn't he? He might be a little bit older. I don't know. I feel like if you're going to spend that money, I'd go after one of Turner or Correa.
Yeah, I ranked mine. I actually put Turner, then Swanson, then Correa, then Bogart, simply because I don't like Carlos Correa as a person.
It's fair.
But I will say that Turner is not ahead of a franchise player. I think he needs to be the supporting cast to a star. And he's kind of like, he's got that like CJ McCollum thing going for me, I think. So if that's your premier signing, I'll be pretty upset. But if you got another guy next to him, maybe, you know, maybe a first baseman or something like that. I don't know. There might be a first baseman who's a free agent this year coming up. Who's
used to playing in Chicago, allegedly.
Yeah, that too. But I mean, you know, Jose Abreu is a free agent, if I'm not mistaken. You know,
could you imagine? Jerry will not let him leave. Nor should I. He shouldn't. If he leaves, I'm going to be pissed. I don't care how little baseball sense it makes.
It'd be interesting to see him in Cubby Blue, I will say.
That'd be bad.
Bad for baseball. But in any case, any lasting thoughts about the White Sox going forward before we decide to end the show and get to that final question?
I want them to win games this week. You got Houston. You got Cleveland. Really, it's time to get time to make a move. I'm not expecting them to, you know, destroy Houston, but you split that series and you sweep Cleveland, you're probably in first place at this time next week. That's obviously a dream scenario, but that's kind of where they've been all year, where they're like a dominant week away from being in first, and they have not been able to do it. I don't know if they're going to be able to, but the end of the season still, I feel it's all going to come down to that. Six of the last nine are against Minnesota with the series against the Padres. Sans Fernando Tatis Jr. Shoved in there in the middle. But it's really going to come down to the end here. I don't know. This week's a big opportunity. Kind of should be a nice barometer of, is this run actually serious or are they just beating up on the garbage Tigers? I don't know. I don't really have a lot of faith right now, but a theme of this episode for me, I don't know.
Fair enough. A man of honesty at the very least. So obviously that is the end of our episode, but of course Pat has not heard this question yet. And it's one of my favorites that I've had in a while. I think I say that every time. But let's just put it this way. Where does Johnny Cueto rank in team MVP for the White Sox this year so far?
That's a good question. Huh? I thought at first the question was going to be, where does he rank in terms of Rick Hahn's free agent signings? And honestly, as sad as this is, he's somewhere near the top right now, given how Dallas Keuchel and the way it's looking, Yasmani Grandal might not see the end of his contract either. But in any event, where does he rank in terms of the team MVP? I think the only way to do this is basically go who would be in front of him right now. And the only names I can come up with, like unequivocally, that would be ahead of him would be Dylan Cease and then probably Jose Abreu. That's probably it. So I would say he's somewhere around two or three. I think it's hard to give anybody else but Cease, just given how historically dominant his season has been. Especially these last couple starts, last 13 starts when he's had like a 0.6 ERA. So I would put Johnny Cueto. It's tough because like Abreu's having a really good year just without the power. And Johnny Cueto has basically helped prevent the rotation from being absolutely atrocious. So I'd say probably three right now.
That's fair. I'm putting him at two just because.
Yeah.
But I think Dylan Cease and then the field, but Johnny Cueto leading the field.
It's crazy to think that like this is where we are though. That like Johnny Cueto is probably the second or at worst, third most important player for the White Sox so far this year.
And the Twins wanted him. Could be a lot worse in the standings.
Jeez, yeah. The Twins also wanted Yasmani Grandal a few years ago, so
could have balanced out then.
Yeah, maybe. It's been bad.
Yeah, it has been. Much too. My joy. Okay, so that concludes our episode of the Shoeless Code Podcast. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on Chicago.com. Thank you, Pat, so much. I know we're going to do this again this week, hopefully to a much more decisive and happier co-host for sure.
I want to be on one side or the other. That's all I want.
Fair enough. We love that. Remember, everybody, Yadi Molina is not a Hall of Famer. You'll hear that on live television soon as well. Go Cubs, go White Sox, go MLB. Come on, baby, don't you wanna go? Come on, baby, don't you wanna go?
same old place, sweet home, Chicago.